I'm Jackie Leiden, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away. And it's time for the weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. And sitting in their chairs this week are author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney, and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Asian pop columnist Jeff Yang. Hello, everybody.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hello.
Hey, Jackie.
How you doing?
Jimmy Israel.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
How you doing?
I feel
oh, yeah.
It's a privilege to be here
Welcome
with you all.
Welcome to the shop.
Oh, thank you so much. This is great.
Okay.
So, Jimmy.
And, hey, and everybody else, fellas, how we doing? Welcome to the shop.
What's cracking?
It's all right.
Good, man.
Yeah, we make it work.
Hey, Jimmy, I got to say, we do tend to get a little giddy, a little boyish when Jackie's around. I just got to say that. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I'll keep up with you. I promise.
Okay. Well,
so, Jimmy, you want to lead us off?
Yeah, let's get things started talking about the changing look of America. Now, the U.S. Census Bureau released final results of the 2010 count yesterday, and a brief titled Race and Ethnicity confirms what many of us already knew. Minorities are on the rise, and blacks are moving out of the cities rather than, you know, just hanging out and moving on up.
And Jimmy, Jackie? We saw three trends that we want to hear more about, and they're fascinating. First, Hispanics accounted for more than half of all U.S. population growth in the last decade. Second, African Americans are, as you say, moving out of metropolitan cities in large numbers, and many of them are headed south after historic migrations up north decades ago. And then third, Asian and Hispanic populations grew at the same rate. So, as you say, something we knew, we sensed, but now some numbers confirming that the day when non-Hispanic whites will be the minority in the U.S. is coming up even sooner than expected.
See, indeed it is. Now, Ruben, let's start with the Hispanic population. You wrote a piece about this. Now, what's your take on the numbers and the growth of the Hispanic population now to 50 million in this country?
Yeah, over 50 million people against the backdrop. Yeah, against the backdrop of just over 300 million people in the country. You're talking about 17% of the population. A significant thing happened about 7-8 years ago. It was said that Latinos would outnumber African Americans to become sort of the number one, the largest minority in the country, whatever that means. And it was supposed to happen in 2010, but it happened in 2003. And the reason that's important is because the trends for Hispanic growth have really been blowing the demographers away. They can't keep track of it. And so they keep saying that there'll be like this benchmark where they used to say by 2050, 25% of the country would be Hispanic. And then now by that time, it'll be more like 30, almost 35% in some cases. So that's an important trend, the fact that it's growing so fast. The other trend is that it's popping up in very interesting places. You know, the number one growth states for the top growth states are places like Georgia and Louisiana and Arkansas, a lot in the South, a lot in the Midwest, and less in traditional places like Texas and California, even though they're growing fast in those places. Really, it's much more interesting to look at North Carolina and those kinds of states and see what's happening in Alabama and the changes that are going on there. And the other thing that's really interesting is obviously it's a very young population. It's a population that's 80% English dominant or bilingual. The perception is that we all speak Spanish exclusively. That's not true. There's a great presence in English, and it's a very dynamic population. So it's going to be an interesting thing to watch. My final thought on this is just that this is as important a transformation of the country. Even though it's still a Protestant country, it's going to soon cease to become a majority Protestant country because of the growth of the Catholic population and other non-Protestant populations. So, you know, it happens, it changes, the country becomes something new, and yet civilization doesn't crumble. You know, we all go on, and, you know, the country still thrives. And likewise, we'll get through this, you know. Let me help. Give me your hand. I'll walk you through it. It'll be fine. It'll be good. You know, we mean you no harm. That's my headline today.
We you
mean
come
you
in
no
peace.
Harm.
We come in peace.
Right.
Say, habla español. We're cool.
Right. A-Train, now, how might the increase of legal Hispanics in the U.S. affect immigration laws?
I think that's a very good question, Jimmy. You know, obviously, you know, we're seeing an increased, you know, diversification of, you know, ethnic minorities here in the United States, and which I think is a wonderful trend, obviously, you know, going back to the fact that, you know, we are an immigrant nation. And so this is sort of the browning of America, if you will. But, you know, I think most importantly what we're going to start to see, you know, with the numbers and statistics that Ruben gave was increased political clout for minorities within the American political and legal system. And I think that that's very important, you know, as we move forward towards things like, you know, comprehensive immigration reform and basically any other domestic or foreign policy issues, you know, dealing with the legislative and executive branches of the United States. And so, you know, it's very heartening for me to see that, you know, minority groups that have traditionally been underrepresented within our American political system with their growing demographic numbers are going to see an increase in political clout in the decades to come as well.
And of course, we're talking about minorities who ultimately will not be minorities.
Right.
You know, I started my NPR career in Chicago, and I was looking at some of this information and thinking about, for example, blues coming up from the Delta. There have been some fantastic books, Isabel Wilkerson's book, about migration to Chicago. What about cities like that, Chicago, L.A., New York, African-American populations moving out? Jimmy, will they look different, be different?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in time it'll even out. But here in Cleveland, you know, we're experiencing that kind of migration, or I should say drain. A lot of brown faces are actually leaving town. And a lot of that has to do with the foreclosure crisis that has displaced a lot of people and pushed them to outlying suburbs. But I think in time, I think it'll all even back out. But at the end of the day, I mean, what's also happening is that there's rumors in the black community that it's really popping down south, and a lot of people are headed to the Atlanta, also known as the new black Mecca. And when they get there, they're finding the same help wanted signs they saw when they left wherever they were from. So, you know, once that reality sets in that, you know, it's bad everywhere, then it'll even out in different places. But, you know, these things are cyclical. What are you going to do?
At least they'll have better weather.
Well, and you got a LeBron James flight in Cleveland, too.
Yeah, that was the start of the trend right there, baby.
Jeff Yang.
Yeah, and we see how he ended up, right?
Let's get Jeff in here.
Yeah.
Jeff, the New York City region has, as we said, the highest black population in the U.S. If you couple that with the Asian population shifting out, tell me how these trends are changing American cities, where we've seen so many Asian newcomers.
Well, you know, obviously the rate of increase in the Asian American population is also, you know, as you noted, you know, kind of out of proportion to people's expectations. So, you know, people talk about the browning of America, and, you know, unfortunately, you get these sort of same creepy stories about the yellowing of America, which always sounds worse somehow. I mean, you know, browning at least sounds kind of delicious and crispy or something.
But
yellowing is never good. So, you know, the interesting thing is the Asian American population is growing very fast, in part because our numbers are relatively small. We've, you know, gone from around 3-4% to now around 5%, but we are more visible in a lot of the kind of larger metropolitan areas because we're very focused, very concentrated. California, for instance, about a third of all Asian Americans are there, and we now make about 13% of the state of California. So there's a very, very kind of, you know, obvious presence of Asian Americans, especially in places like the Bay Area, for instance. One out of every three people is Asian American.
Talk to me about this word ethnoburb, which I think was coined by an academic to define what's happening in the greater metropolitan areas of California and other Californian cities and others.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because when we think about ethnic enclaves historically, you know, you think of places that people have to be because, you know, they can't speak the language, because they need certain services that are clustered together by definition. But ethnoburbs are essentially enclaves of choice. It's like places where people speak languages other than English because they choose to, not because they have to, because they don't want you to know what they're saying, maybe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these ethnoburbs are suburban areas that have become gravitational clusters for Asian American immigrants, in some cases Latino immigrants. They've generally been much more high in the socioeconomic ladder, you know, affluent and upscale as opposed to more working class. And we've seen a lot of them grow up in Southern California, in the San Gabriel Valley. You know, they have what's, you know, sometimes referred to as the Jade Necklace, seven or eight towns, all of which have great schools and lots of fairly wealthy Asian American families. Mm-hmm. And then also in Northern California, you see, you know, places like Cupertino, places where there's a lot of high-tech and educational, again, you know, emphasis where Asian Americans have gone. And it's not, again, because of need, but by choice.
Well, you know, Jimmy, one important point about the overall, taking all the groups, there's always a tendency to sort of talk about the groups individually, but taken as a whole, mm-hmm. the big story, as Jackie mentioned before, is you're going to hit this time, you're going to hit this point in America, in the United States, in 20 years or 25 years, and the demographers aren't really sure because it keeps fluctuating, but somewhere around the year 2035, you're going to hit this tipping point where whites are now the minority, the statistical minority in this country. And it's going to be a huge thing, and it's already sort of happening in some places, and the writing's on the wall. Right. And the reason this is important is because if you think right now that some of our resistance to the Muslim population we talk about, Arsalan and others we talk about, the concerns that the birthers have about Barack Obama and the concerns of changing America, right. if you think the immigration debate with Latinos isn't all wrapped up in this, you're kidding yourself.
Absolutely.
Already people understand what it's going to be like, and they fear for their children and what it's going to be like for their children to grow up in a time where whites are the minority. And it's already feeding right now this kind of ugly nativism that brings all these non-white people together. You know, it's that we all have the same folks who are concerned. If they're concerned with you, they're also concerned with me. And they
right.
the reason is because we share that one common trait that we're not white.
You know,
wow.
Actually,
yeah. you know, Baldwin said it best. You know, they'll come for you in the morning, but they'll come for us in the night. Straight
oh,
up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, that's got to be coupled, too, with this larger sense,
John.
That, you know, it's not just about America. It's about the world, right? You know, we're looking at a world in which the majority of the world, much more than 50%, has been non-white forever, right? Only now those people are getting powerful and rich, and they have economies that are expanding. And, you know, you look at things like the last political elections, people running against China. They were not running against their opponents. Yeah. And that's only going to continue as well.
Okay. If you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly Barbershop segment, and we're joined by author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Asian pop columnist Jeff Yang. Back to you, Jimmy.
Jack A, thank you. All right.
Well, A-train, good morning. You got A-train for Arsalan over there. Very okay.
For sure.
That's how we roll.
Right. So it's like this. Good Morning America had some hot interviews as of late, from Charlie Sheen winning to Chris Brown whining. Now, he deflected some questions about the 2009 domestic violence incident involving his former girlfriend, pop star Rihanna, and sang a song from his new album that apparently flipped out in the dressing room afterwards, busting a window and causing a ruckus. Jackie, we got some tape lying around, don't we?
I hope so.
Just,
I hope so.
Don't get it. Okay, just...
All right, let's hit it. We sure do. Here is ABC host Robin Roberts asking him about the incident.
But you can understand how some people, you know, what that was very serious, what
yeah.
you went through and what happened and what... even the judge, though, afterwards said that you had served your time mm-hmm. as far as the community service and that
yeah.
and move it on. But have you been able to? How have you been able to?
I've been
that...
focusing on his album, you know. I think this album is what, you know, I want people to hear and want people to really get into. So definitely this album is what I want them to talk about and not the stuff that happened 2 years ago.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Wow.
Come on, man.
Wow. Yeah, thanks for that, Jackie.
He's in denial?
I think everybody in the barbershop knows how I feel about this, because I have a son and I have a daughter, and I'm also a grown man who's been in my share of relationships, and sadly I've seen this play out in real life, where people when I saw this happening, I was like, you know, to me it looked like two people who used violence to communicate, because there were reports flying around that she had started the incident. And when this kind of thing happens, it always makes me uncomfortable to comment on, because I've seen it. I've seen it happen, and I wasn't there. And for me, it was all I wanted to leave it alone. I didn't want to discuss it. I didn't want to look. It was like a bad car accident. And here we go, a couple years later, and this young man hasn't learned to cope with what happened, his role in what happened. And I think it's all sad and pathetic. But what
wow.
do you guys think about this?
Wow.
You know,
I mean,
hold on a second. I don't feel sorry for him. Let me be clear about that. It's just, you know, I don't want to hear any more about it. It's a non-story as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I think it's between Rihanna and Chris, especially when Rihanna is trying to have
well.
Reportedly was trying to have a restraining order against Chris Brown lifted, so they could be. So they can be cool. So like I said, I've seen this play out in real life, where you got the Bickersons, where they hit each other one moment, and the next moment they're all on top of each other. And I would much rather just tell Chris Brown to play his music, tell Rihanna to play her music, and be about that, because I don't want to hear about the domestics again, ever again in life. Go ahead, Jeff.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like, you know, there's a long history of, you know, even in just R&B music, these kind of toxic relationships. And stemming back to, you know, like Ike Turner, David Ruffin, James Brown, everything, I feel like when you ignore these things and just say, okay, we're going to keep that in the closet, then what happens is that somebody in that closet gets a beatdown. And I'm not sure that, especially given this latest incident. I mean, the guy has clearly some anger management issues he's got to address. Yeah. You know, well, impulse control issues. He's got to get – I think he should go off scene and try to address those before, you know, before something bad happens again.
You know, and this is Arsalan. You know, the bottle of peroxide that he poured on his head has apparently seeped through into his brain because, you know, there are a few things here. First of all, you know, he didn't just hit Rihanna. He made Rihanna look like Buster Douglas. I mean, you know, that was some serious stuff. And what I found the most amusing was, you know, the fact that he said, oh, well, you know, I didn't know that, you know, Good Morning America was going to ask me about these questions. That's like Michael Vick going on Oprah and not, you know, being expecting to, you know,
hear about the dogs.
And, you know, it's I'm just, you know, I'm spinning the world's smallest turntables for Chris Brown right now.
I think this was inappropriate for Robin Roberts to go there. It's been 2 years. I think that he has aired this out. He aired this out with Oprah. Remember, we did that whole thing with Oprah. And I think that this was, looking at it from a journalist point of view, I think this is Robin Roberts trying to ask a question that gets him in a gotcha moment because other journalists would do the same. And I don't justify what he did, but at some point it's been 2 years and it's been aired out. And I think he was right to sort of say, really, really, seriously, you want to talk about this again? So,
well, yeah, he should have fronted her on like that on real, on live television. Like, really, is that what we're talking about 2 years later? You know, that's what you should have done.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave that and say goodbye. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the Washington Post Writers Group, and he was with us from San Diego. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle, and he joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Jeff Yang is the Asian pop columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. He was in New York today at the New York Bureau. And Arsalan Iftikhar, right here, a civil rights attorney and founder of themuslimguide.com, in the studio with me. This was great. I hope I can come back again sometime.
Peace.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, all.
Yep, yep.
That's our program for today. I'm Jackie Leiden. It's Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin comes back on Monday.